The Skiffy and Fanti Show presents a Hollywood Forgotten Pilots special episode, The Last Crusader of Saturn's Moon. It's 1998, and a string of spontaneous dancing events at multiple fast food restaurants has left the nation in turmoil. 2 million have died because they danced too much. 2 million more have died because they were trampled by dancing people at Burger King, Taco Bell, McDonald's, KFC, and A&W, Quiznos, Subway, Panda Express, In-N-Out, Carl's Jr., because Hardee's is a stupid name for a restaurant, Wendy's, and like a dozen or so other places. A lot of dead people and burgers, basically. You get the idea. In a secret underground compound where really important people go while the rest of us suffer from fits of dancing and fall into an endless parade of unintentional advertising for fast food corporations, the president and his cabinet work diligently to solve the world's problems.
Mr. President, as you know, the event we now call the dancing has affected almost every corner of the United States and just recently consumed Massachusetts. We've sent SEAL teams into the quarantine zone to ascertain the extent of the damage, but it doesn't look good.
My God, General, that leaves us with Minnesota, Georgia, Maryland, D.C., Hawaii, and West Virginia. This pattern is suspicious, don't you think?
You're right. Those are the only states that Jimmy Carter won in the 1980 election. How is that possible?
There's another force at work here. Damn! I knew letting those aliens become American citizens would ruin us. I told Reagan not to let them in, but he wouldn't listen. Now the world's on fire and we can't do a thing to stop it.
Not quite, Mr. President.
What are you talking about, General?
We still have a team on the ground in Los Angeles. They haven't been infected yet. Wheels thinks he's close.
Wheels?
That's what he called himself at the Academy. He's sort of a vigilante, if you will. Used to work for the CIA, but they said he was too dark for undercover work and so obsessed with bizarre foods that having him around other agents was sort of like putting a vegetarian in a meatpacking facility. So we sent him to Hollywood to become an actor.
And?
He's a better assassin than an actor.
And you trust this man?
No, but he's all we've got.
Give him every resource we have available. We must solve this before there's nothing left to save.
Yes, sir.
Meanwhile, on the dusty streets of Los Angeles, a man watches the fires rage in the city center from his chair, a mysterious cloaked companion sitting on his shoulder. He looks upon the world with soot-rimmed eyes, the face of a man who has lost everything. Behind him, three skulls rest on pikes, their bones seeming to dance in the wind. In his hand, a McDonald's wrapper, which he clutches with the determination of a salty pirate trying to open a jar of peanuts. He's attractive, but not too attractive. Like Gerard Butler, without the Scottish accent. Or the bottom half of Sean Connery and Zardoz, but where you still know that there's the top half with the accent, but you can't see it. Or half of Ryan Gosling's face. That works. Anyway, our hero monologues while the words stream beside him, because that's how you make good movies.
The event was called The Dancing, and it sparked a violent revolution around the world, destroying the ozone layer over Australia, and causing oil reserves in the Middle East to turn into Coca-Cola, because physics. We drank it all because people were thirsty. The event reduced the world to a confusing war where people shot missiles at other people without realizing they might have shot that missile at somebody they knew, and then maybe they realized it later but didn't feel guilty about it because that guy was a jerk who tried to steal that other guy's boyfriend. You get the idea. The world is in chaos, and I'm going to save it. There aren't any more sodas, Mac. Coca-Cola blew up when Ronald McDonald performed Riverdance in every Coke factory on the planet. You know that. General, what can I do for you?
Wheels, I told the president you were getting close to figuring this thing out. Don't make a liar out of me.
I won't, General. Mac discovered a message in one of the downed Coca-Cola factories in Los Angeles. It said, "The dancers love puppies." We're close, General. Real close.
Wait, what? The dancers love puppies? That's your clue? Seriously?
It was written in blood, General. That, and there's one more puppy store left in the United States, and it just so happens to be in Los Angeles.
Oh, good. I was worried someone had written it on some used butt paper and left on the floor as a joke. Silly me.
Don't joke, General. Laughter is what happens when you still have a soul. I drowned mine in the pond a long time ago.
Right. Anyway, the president says you have every resource at your disposal.
That's right, Mac. A backpack, 13 Big Macs, a 19th century six-shooter, and the last Coca-Cola on the planet Earth.
And a helicopter with a half-empty tank.
Mac says we only do the glass half-full thing around these parts.
Well, someone has to be optimistic around here, I guess.
Nah. He's just an alien who thinks Coca-Cola is as good as family, which is a good thing, since we ate his family last month.
Let me guess. Tasted like chicken, right?
No. They tasted like betrayal. Goodbye, General. We'll be in touch.
On the other side of the city, two mysterious figures fumble with a metallic object. Lightning bolts surge in the sky above them, and the sound of puppies crying in the background pierces the air. Between their fumbling, their pelvises thrust out, and the sweet tones of Michael Jackson escape their lips.
Jamona!
Stop that and connect the transportal atomizer to the tricyclomycin acclimator to the flux minor igneum refibrillator.
Did our boss ever consider giving things names that don't sound like chemo medications?
Our boss is a dimension-crossing immortal being who has spent the last few years as a giant atomized cloud in the shape of a ridiculous helmet. He hasn't the patience for making life easy.
And yet he giggles every time you say the word penis.
I don't pretend to understand dimensional beings, but yes, he giggles at the word penis. You might also have noticed that he has a thing for dancing, even though he doesn't have a corporeal body and hasn't released a number one hit in years. Go figure. He also likes tiddlywinks, but who doesn't, right? Now hand over the acronomic orbitizer. That ought to do it.
Shall I do the honors?
Be my guest. It'll probably blow up anyway, and if it doesn't, then the world will be lost in fits of endless dancing. Even Wall Street will be forced to do the worm until their skin peels off on the pavement.
That's encouraging. Well, here goes!
It's working! Look, the dancer is materializing!
Hidden in a nearby alley, Wheels and Mac realize that they were wrong all along. They're used to it.
You were wrong, Mac. All along. Wrong. It's not an infection. It's not disease. It's dimensional portal magic. And there's no vaccine for magic. Only violent destruction. You're right, Mac. We have to stop this before it's too late. That's a great idea, Mac. You get the chopper. I'll stall them. Here goes nothing. Hey, you! Stop, or I'll shove my wheelchair up your rectal cavity.
Oh, no! It's Wheels!
Who?
You know, Wheels! The Wheeled Crusader! The Knuckle Roller! The Hill Dumper! The Ford Motor Special! The Donut Rump Nut!
My friends call me Pain!
Well, it's too late. The process has already started. Soon your world will bask in the dancified glory of our master, the Great One, the Dancer of Thieves, the Master of Shakes, the Prince of the Ballroom. See? He has nicknames, too. All of mankind would dance before him until their legs are mere stumps, and then they'll dance more in their own blood, slipping and sliding like really poor breakdancers.
You really didn't think that speech through.
No.
Listen here, bub. You don't stop that portal, and I'll be forced to run my wheels over your face. And then I'll do it again just to make sure the tire tracks sink in. And then I'll cut off your legs and cook them over a warm fire and make your friend eat them with a side of beans.
That's disconcerting, but I'm afraid there's nothing to be done. He will return if you do cook his legs. There's nothing to be done. Jamona!
He has arrived. Feast upon him, my wheeled nemesis. He is your master. Soon you will dance too.
The funny thing about being born as a badass in a wheelchair is... your dimension magic can't make me dance.
What is that sound?
That, my friends, is the sound of justice. Nah, I'm kidding. It's a helicopter. And my friend is going to drive it right into your dimensional portal being's eyeball.
You bastard! You ruined everything!
Do you have, like, liner notes on your script? Like,
oh, I forgot. This city isn't big enough for the two of us. General, it's done.
Great work, Wheels. Now to take back this country piece by piece. Thank you for your service.
Don't mention it. I've got a long road ahead of me and some alien barbecue to eat.
Right. Okie dokie, then. Have fun with that.
You can come out now, my dear. Everything is clear.
Do they suspect us?
No. They never expect... well, you know how the line goes.
Good. I would hate for our plans to have been to be accelerated further. We're too close to let anyone stop us, not even your alien friends. I'm happy you took care of them. Their Americanization made them too dangerous for us.
I would burn an entire alien world for you, my dear, just so we could rule the Earth. You and me. Forever.
Not just the Earth, my sweet cannibal. The entire solar system!
To be continued. I mean, seriously. It's not like Sean knows how to end a damn skit anyway, so we'll drag this out into 12 interlocked episodes, and then he'll claim that it's all part of the same connected universe, and then we'll all have to come back for another episode just to record the other parts, because why the fuck not? Anyway, tune in next time, folks. I don't know. Find out whatever weird shit Sean pulls out of his ass for next time. The end.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
But the Krell forgot one thing, it's monsters, John. Monsters from the id.
There you go again, always blaming me for everything.
Go switch off!
Exterminate!
It's a trap!
This looks extraordinarily bad.
Commencing countdown. T-minus 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanti Show.
Torture Cinema Mac and Me. Levels of product placement not seen again until Chuck Season 2.
I'm Sean.
I'm Rachel.
I'm Paul.
I'm David.
And I'm Julia.
And we're here for Torture Cinema, the Sean's Childhood Edition, because I may have watched this on, like, Betamax or whatever when I was a child. So, yay, we'll be talking about that later. So, yeah, we're talking about Mac and Me. You all picked this movie, and that's what we're watching. So why don't we just start in by talking about what we are drinking, and then we'll get into our likes and dislikes after we describe the movie. So, Rachel, what are you drinking?
So I'm visiting my parents in Boise right now, and apparently they have this amazing thing in the grocery stores where they have, like, all this beer and cider on tap, and you just, like, go to the grocery store and get growlers.
Really?
Yes.
Holy crap.
I know, right? So my parents went and got me a growler full of cider that is not Angry Orchard. I'm trying to remember what kind they said it was. It wasn't a brand that I recognized, but it's very good.
Nice. All right. Paul, what about you?
I have nothing anywhere near as cool as that. I just have a Goose Island India Pale Ale, which is a little brewery up here in the Midwest.
I think that's fair. That's fair, Paul. All right, David?
A lime Diet Coke.
David is our designated podcast driver.
You know what? Someone's got to do it, because I'll tell you what, after these episodes, I'm not ready to basically even move from my chair. So, yeah. All right.
See you at home safe.
Yeah. Julia, what about you?
I'm sick, and I've been sick for weeks, and I may never get better, it seems like. Aww. So I'm drinking peppermint tea.
Oh my god, that sounded so sad.
It is sad, you guys. It's very sad. You can hear how I was sick in the interview with Ann Leckie. I have not gotten better. I got worse, a lot worse, and I have gotten a little bit better from being worse, but I am still bad.
Is it swine flu?
Possibly.
Good to know.
The bubonic death.
No, I think it may have been some version of the flu, because there were a few days where I like literally couldn't get out of bed, and now I'm out of bed.
Yeah, that sounds like influenza to me.
And then you watch this movie, so that sounds like a great thing.
Yeah, that was my reward for getting out of bed. I got to watch this.
Well, I will tell you this, Julia. This movie helped me get through many asthma attacks.
I'm so sorry.
I just don't... Sean, there's so much wrong with this.
I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding either.
This is like the Skiffy and Fanny show, why Sean is the way he is edition. And I don't know if this is...
Secret origins.
Yeah, is this like the deep dive we really want to take into your psychology? Because I watched this movie and I'm fucking scared now, man.
this is going to be very, very personal for me because this is a film I watched when I was a kid because we had it on tape.
Are you going to like rip off your mask and then all that's beneath it is like a blow-up doll face?
No, that's freaking
filled with Skittles.
Filled with Skittles.
He can only drink Coke. Because that's what it's like on his planet.
Yes. We're getting into likes and dislikes, though.
Before we get into my childhood too much, I will at least explain what I'm drinking. I decided, since it is fall still, and it was Thanksgiving, I should go something pumpkin-themed, so I just made another Bloody Pumpkin. Only I put a lot of vodka in it. So there may be more vodka than there is anything else.
I think Paul and I might differ with you on this being fall.
That's exactly what I was thinking, David.
I know, it snowed here over the week. So
it's going to drop below 0 Fahrenheit again tonight.
It's just going to get down to 9 Fahrenheit here. So
it was -26 here yesterday.
Oh, that's amazing.
I'm living in the warm part of the world.
That's in Celsius. What is that in American?
-13 Fahrenheit.
Okay, that's pretty cold.
Yeah.
I would take your winters. You can have my ridiculous 60-degree weather.
Oh, you do need to actually spend a winter in Minneapolis, much less Winnipeg, and then we'll see what you think of that.
When you walk outside and the wind hits your face and it feels like very large carpenter nails are being driven into your bone. Maybe that's your thing.
It is my thing. You will understand after this episode, I'm sure, how much that will be.
Yeah, quite possibly.
Anyway, so that's what I'm drinking. There we go. That's everything we're drinking. We should now describe this movie. So who would like to take a stab to describe the plot of this movie?
I will.
But you have to be nice. Describe this movie, but be really nice, Julia.
I'll describe this movie.
But be really nice.
I'll describe this movie.
I want you to repeat after me. I, Julia Rios, will be nice to the movie that helped define Sean's childhood, so as to not ruin his childhood and make him cry for the next month.
Sean, do you need to, like, step away?
Julia Rios will describe this movie.
Go ahead, Julia. I'm intervening and taking over the podcast again. Go ahead, Julia. Describe the movie for us. Shut up, Sean.
Okay, so basically in the late 80s, after E.T. was a giant success, McDonald's and Coke and some other studio execs decided that they should make a different version of E.T. that was meant to sell their products. So they made Mac and Me. The title is directly rip off the working title of E.T., which was E.T. and Me, which was shortened to E.T. and for a theatrical release. But Mac and Me is, you know, what stayed the title of Mac and Me, and Mac stands for Mysterious Alien Creature. Now, the plot of Mac and Me is basically ripped directly from the plot of E.T. There's an mysterious alien creature that meets up with a boy in a neighborhood, and the government's chasing them, and the alien wants to go home, and, you know, you've seen this all in E.T. But the difference is this one's basically one long commercial for Skittles and Coke and McDonald's and Chevron and Wix furniture stores And I'm not even sure what else, but there are a lot of different product placements in this movie, including a 5-minute dance scene in a McDonald's with Ronald McDonald as a credited cast member. So basically, you have all of that and not much actual plot that makes any sense. But I guess if you were a kid and didn't know any better, it's less scary than E.T. So there's that. Question mark? That's all I got. Oh, also the main character is in a wheelchair, which is actually cool.
Okay, so now I have to describe this movie because that just is... No, that's wrong. I'm sorry, Julia.
The mysterious alien creature only eats Skittles and drinks Coke because, quote, it must be what's on his planet.
Life-giving Coke.
It is. As you know, Coca-Cola is a life-giving thing, which is why it is, of course, in those like rations they give at the military. They put a little can of Coke in there. It's true. Ask Mike Cole. He knows.
Sorry, Mike.
This is probably not true, what I just said. I'm making a lot of things up. So, no, that's close enough, Julia. You're right. There's, yeah.
I forgot. There's one really important thing that I forgot. Basically, the way that this mysterious alien creature gets onto Earth to begin with is that there is a space probe that is somehow powered that somehow arrives on a planet. It's very unclear how this thing is actually able to travel through space or land or get out of that planet's gravity well. But maybe we're getting into likes and dislikes. However, it basically has a vacuum cleaner and sucks up three aliens or possibly four.
Four. It sucks up four.
It sucks up four aliens through its vacuum cleaner, and that's how they come to Earth.
Four aliens that for no reason resemble a classic nuclear family.
Yes.
No, I'm sorry. That's false.
There's a mom, a dad, a sister, and a brother.
No.
And a baby. That's right. Yeah, okay. That's right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there is technically a male, a female, a son, and a daughter there. However, the aliens are largely physically, they're nondescript in that sense. They actually, at the end of the film, which is the thing is one of my dislikes, but I guess I'll save that. Because I realize I'm going to go into why I actually got really pissed off and why I disagree with the point you're making is because of something that happens in the film. So can we just start with dislikes and I can just do that one real quick? Because
sure.
Okay, let's start with dislikes. Go, okay. Sean.
All right, so I'll start with dislikes. So yes, technically speaking, there's a dad, a mom, a son, and a daughter. However, the alien bodies, for very obvious reasons, do not, obvious being that they're naked the whole time, at least from human standards, they're not wearing clothes. They have very little physical about them that makes them specifically male, female, at least from a human perspective. And so when we get to the end of the film, one of the things that happens is they basically gender normalize them. The quote unquote mom is now dressed up like a typical sort of like in a dress and like what would be considered traditional woman garb. The man is dressed in a suit. The boy is dressed like a little boy and all of these things. And so what we end up in the end is all of this stuff being normalized is these are the predefined roles for you when that may not even be what is predefined in their culture, whatever their alien culture is. And I found that actually really frustrating because the whole time they're naked. We don't actually know, other than from our own preconceived notions about family dynamics, who are the male and the female in this. Rachel,
I'm actually using hand for once.
Yes.
For torture cinema. I will call bullshit on that because if nothing else, there are several scenes in the movie where, for some reason, no reason that I can detect, the aliens have gotten themselves cloth, like ragged brown cloth, and the alien that is coded as the mom is the one who ends up wearing it, like when they go into the grocery store. So the thing is, while I understand that they're aliens and shouldn't be, you know, understood that way and all that, frankly, all this shit, like the body language, the fact that the male alien is the tallest one, all of that stuff is basically like a way to inform the human children for whom this horrible movie was intended, God help them, that this is a nuclear family with a mom, a dad, a kid, and a younger kid.
Okay, so how did you determine that that's actually the male? Have you sexed? Have you actually gone out and done
sexting? Oh my god, are you saying that because he doesn't have a dick? He obviously is not coded as the male in the language of the film, because...
In the language of the film, perhaps, but that's from a human's perspective, he's an alien. For all I know, it's actually the she.
Humans made the fucking film, Sean!
Don't care. Don't care. You're already accepting all of the human exceptionalist assumptions about gender. It's just not fair. It's not fair.
Wow.
I'm just fucking with you, Rachel. I get what you mean. I totally agree. I agree. I just, that's something I actually find really frustrating, because, like, it's different from, like, they're different from humans in the sense that physically there aren't as very many obvious differentiations from a physical perspective for them, and that they get coded that way for me drives me insane. So, David, I saw you had a hand,
no,
so...
never mind. It's good. Oh. I'm all good.
Okay. All right. So, anyone else have any thoughts, or Rachel, do you want to maybe go to your first dislike?
We can go through to my first dislike. So, my dislike is the aliens that are uglier than E.T. Like, and I never thought that was possible, but they are the fucking ugliest. Like, if you gave me the choice between seeing, like, these guys or the fucking xenomorph from Alien, I would rather look at the xenomorph, because there is art to the xenomorph. As opposed to these guys look like fucking blow-up dolls with Satan horns. Like, little nubbly Satan horns. And they have the blow-up doll, like, the mouth that is always pursed in a little, like, surprised, whistly O. And just, my poor mother watched this movie with me. I don't know why. I warned her it was going to be terrible, but she did it anyway, because I think she just so desperately wants to spend time with me, and you all owe her an apology, or at least Sean does.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Axe.
Oh my god. So, like, at the end of that movie, she was like, those were the ugliest aliens I've ever seen in my life, because they had absolutely no expression. There is no animation to them. They just have these creepy-ass, bulging, dead eyes, and the blow-up doll mouth, and then, like, they kind of have some body language stuff where you could tell that they tried to do some body work with the actors, but it just comes out sort of looking like Voldo from Soul Calibur.
You're right.
And then they all have, like... You can tell where they're basically wearing, like, latex suits, so they get, like, these creepy, wrinkly thing on their contours. No, they are the ugliest aliens ever. Just no.
Okay, so I would just say this. Part of why I liked this movie when I was a kid is that E.T. scared the shit out of me. No, I'm serious. Like,
E.T. scared me, too. I was not a fan of E.T., but at least E.T. could emote.
Okay, that may be true, but I think partly why that scared the shit out of me is that E.T. could emote. And these don't as much, because I agree with you, this is actually one of my dislikes, too, is the faces on these things are ridiculous. The eyes never look at you. I could never tell, like, what's going on with them. What are they looking at? They're creepy. That said... They didn't scare me as much as E.T., which is why I watched this movie and not E.T.
Can I go next?
Go, Julia.
I also have the aliens as a dislike. So, like, the special effects on these aliens is terrible.
It is.
So E.T. was actually really good special effects-wise, because he could emote. And one of the things that made E.T. So understandable was that he had expression. He had... life to his movement, and also he talked, which these aliens just whistle, which I guess is kind of original, except that the problem is that they don't really communicate with any of the people. Mac whistles a bunch, and he communicates with the other aliens that way and dreams about them a bunch, but there's no real human alien communication going on, which is really annoying. Also, they apparently have no bones, because they are able to just get sucked into a vacuum cleaner, because it not only happens once with the completely against the laws of physics space probe, but I mean, that's a different dislike. But again, when, like, apparently the people who made this thought Ghostbusters was obviously something that kids thought was cool, and so why don't we do a scene where we have the kids put a vacuum cleaner on their back and suck them up, like in Ghostbusters? So they do, and it works. Because apparently they have no bones and can be sucked through a vacuum cleaner, apparently unharmed, Which,
sentient silly putty.
Yeah, it's kind of terrifying. Also, the point when, like, in the beginning, the alien gets hit by the car, and there's just, like, this whole thing of clay stuck to the windshield in flattened eyeball goo, and it's really gross looking and not actually cute at all and not funny and not realistic looking.
And what about the electric fence?
Oh god,
that's actually really creepy. That reminded me of the Twilight movie. Y'all remember that movie?
Twilight? No? Like the vampire Twilight?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's a Twilight Zone movie. Sorry. Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
The Twilight Zone movie, there's that sequence with the kid who can make things appear from his imagination, and he changes his parents into creepy creatures.
These aliens apparently have all kinds of abilities that then do not have any bearing on the plot at all. And there's so much. But they also, they don't talk ever. And so E.T., Moss watched this with me, poor Moss. And he was like, Moss. I was seriously very surprised that he never even bothered to phone home because it was such a big ripoff of E.T. And I was like, well, yeah, but in order to phone home, they'd have to have a deal with AT&T, which E.T. did. And also he'd have to talk. Because E.T. was also a product placement extravaganza. Like, they had Reese's Pieces and AT&T and all kinds of crap in E.T. But,
that's great.
But, he talked, and he said, Elliot. And he said,
Elliot.
And he said, E.T., phone home. Which is the kind of thing that, it's recognizable, and it's kind of baby speak, and it makes you kind of, feel sympathy for this alien, which Mac never does.
Ouch, Elliot.
Yeah, no, that never happens.
No, we just get...
Yeah, but he only talks to the other aliens. There's a fundamental lack of communication between humans and aliens.
True.
And just on the whistling thing, I would note that a lot of the whistles were that, which bothered me.
I was wondering where the wolf whistling was coming from in the first scene when that started to happen.
It was pretty much just all cat calls and bosun's whistles.
Kind of creepy.
I'm kind of okay with that. Well, I guess Paul would be your dislike next?
I might as well pile on because I have this as a gigantic dislike as well. I could not get past these expressionless, googly-eyed aliens, which I think I've seen 80s and 70s Doctor Who episodes of better aliens that evoke more than these things. It's like, what the hell am I watching? I can't tell. I can't get any sense of them as characters. They don't talk. The vacuum cleaner and the spaceship, it's just okay, I can understand it's a kid's movie, but even so, it just kept breaking my brain. And well, I'm not even getting into it as alien as characters because that's a separate dislike. But aliens is their physical appearance. The whole scene with the electric fence is oh god, what the hell? It's and the windshield and then getting chased down. Yeah, it's like no. It's just I guess maybe they hit the uncanny valley for me. It was just ugly in a bad way, and I could only stare at them in horror.
So I have a question. The budget for this film was $13 million.
What did they spend it on, Coke?
That's what was my question.
That's not tiny in 88. I mean, it's not big, but that's not tiny in 88.
Yeah, well, I think they spent it on Mac. He's the best looking of the aliens. He is the cutest of the aliens. And I think they also just ran out of money really quickly.
I will note too that this did not even meet its production budget from its domestic box office. It only made $6.4 million in the box office.
Well,
so
it helps if you actually have a story, which this did not.
That's not true.
Oh, that's a separate like and dislike, and we should get into that.
We'll get into that later.
So, David, your first dislike.
Well, I'm going to join in on the podcast. Pylon with the aliens, and my reaction was very much like what, in fact, like Rachel's. I was looking at this thing with the testicular peeled eyes and the surprised anus mouth, and the kind of hairless cat flesh. And I was thinking, so it's like a cross between E.T. and David Cronenberg's sex monsters from Naked Lunch. And then on top of that, it struck me as being ethically horrifying because we first see them in a desert trying to find water, and they have these distended bellies, and when they whistle, they keep forming their hands up into the shape of bowls, and I'm going, Jesus Christ, please tell me the designers weren't drawing the inspiration that I think they are, and that a weeping Sally Struthers is casting her fell shadow over this.
Please unpack that a little.
This movie just became a million times more horrifying.
That is also more interesting. Some, wow. Terrifyingly true and spot on, David. That's just awful.
Oh God.
I'm like more fascinated by this film as an academic now, David. Explain this. Unpack this.
Well, I kept hoping. I hope this isn't me that's seeing this. That it's not a reflection on me as a viewer, but it just the way that they emphasize their desert conditions. And this is post Live Aid, and I just have this awful feeling that the designers were drawing on you're flicking on the television. Oh look, here's more starving children. Let's model our aliens on those.
Starving people in Ethiopia. That was a big thing in the 80s.
They're strange, other and alien. There you go, right?
Yep.
That's really
And they want to come to live in America.
Where everything will be better, and we'll feed them junk food.
And we'll give them clothes.
Why has nobody done a making of for this movie?
Which would make this, possibly the most ethically bankrupt movie this side of Ilsa Schewolf of the SS.
Oh my God.
That's a low. That's very hard to get below that.
Well, I couldn't think of a few that do, but anyway.
Yeah, I will say that it occurred to me at several points that they basically seemed like it distended naked Furbies.
Oh, God. No, thank you. Ugh.
But tell me I'm wrong, Sean.
they're not Furbies. I can't accept that.
No, because they don't have hair. Or as much speech capability.
Oh god. Whatever, well, man. You just
happily, Sean, it's time for our first like, so
I think so, fun. Yeah. So Rachel, first like.
Okay, so my first like, let's see. So I actually really liked the fact that the main character was a kid in a wheelchair, and
yes!
he had this amazing relationship with his mom.
Yes!
I really, really liked that, actually. Like, the family relationship and, the kids, like the older kid driving them to the work so they could drop off mom, and like that I actually really liked for the 5 minutes it was really, like, front and center. And then, like, that really cute moment when she would, like, they, like, touch their noses together. Ah! That just made me melt inside.
That also kind of looked like the upside-down kiss from Amazing Spider-Man.
I hate you so much, David. Shut your face.
That's 20 years later, man. Stop ruining life.
Why do Canadians ruin everything?
Oh, hey,
guys.
No need to be ethnocentric now.
David, you're just bitter because you didn't get to see the Babadook today. Admit it.
Yes, I am. Very.
So this is actually my like as well, Rachel. Well, it's actually two of my likes, which is really unfortunate because now I'm going through two of them. Because I agree with you. I love that the main character is a kid in a wheelchair, a person with a disability, essentially. But that he's not presented as somebody who is, like, weak because he is. He actually – they play to the strengths of that. So, like, the chase scene, one of the chase scenes in this – involves the kid on the wheelchair running away from guys in suits in his wheelchair. And I love it. That moment was great when he's like just wheeling away. And then like there's no point in this film, for me at least, and maybe I missed something, but I didn't see it, in which it's ever presented as though there's something wrong with him, right? He's just a kid in a wheelchair. That's life. He's just whatevs, right? And I like that. I like that a lot. Because I thought that was a very positive message. And that leads me to the one that you also brought up, which is also my other like, which I'm just going to throw out now, and I'm just going to not go next round, which is the family dynamic. Because this is such a strong family film. From start to finish, it is a family film. It's about family. Everything about it is about family. And I love that the family is a good family. It's a single mom with two boys living next to this relatively well-put-together family, which has two girls. Rather convenient. I don't know why that ended up that way, but whatever. And like the relationship with them is great. It's a positive relationship. It's not sort of grungy or dirty. And at the end, we have that the main narrative is essentially about them reuniting the alien with his family. It's all about family in a very positive, optimistic way. And I love that. And that made me happy. So, yeah.
So I also agree that the wheelchair user is an awesome protagonist. And the first thing I checked was to see whether this actor was actually a wheelchair user. And he is. Jade Caligari has spinal bifida and totally was a wheelchair racer at the age of 10, beating people who were twice his age in wheelchair races.
Sweet.
At the time, which is awesome. And so, like, you can really tell that they chose him because of that and did a lot of the action scenes around that. There is a lot of him going down hills. There is the giant scene where he goes out looking for Mac toward the beginning of the movie and starts to roll uncontrollably down a hill, tries to stop himself, but his brake doesn't work, and then falls off a cliff into a pond, which is like, a plot wise, it's like, what the hell is this? Why is this happening? What even?
Paul Rudd knows.
But
yes,
but that gets into Paul a Rudd later. Knows. That gets into a later. Like, Sean, don't mention that again. but I will say that, like, from the point of view of stunt work, it's amazing. It's this kid rolling down a cliff and into a pond on a wheelchair. That is like hardcore stunt action. So, and that's probably one of the best action sequences in the movie. Like, then it's very unclear what Mac actually does to save him, but let's just leave that aside. But yeah, I love the fact that we saw him, at several points. The things that someone who doesn't use a wheelchair might wonder about, we got to see him doing and see that he clearly could do a lot of things for himself. Like, we saw him transferring from his bed to his chair, and we saw him being able to move around. Like, when the people came in and the movers were moving their stuff in, the one guy's like, hey, your mom said this TV goes in your room. Do you want me to hook it up for you? And he's like, no, I got it. Just set it down over there. And the guy doesn't like say, oh, but I'm sure you won't be able to do that because you're in a wheelchair. He's like, oh, okay. Sets it down. And then, you know, the kid is able to go and hook up his own TV. Which is great. I mean, yay.
Yeah, I love that so much. I also love his relationship with his mom. Like, the house. Like, she picked the house so that it would fit his needs as well.
Yeah, well, obviously she would do that as the parent of a child.
Well, yeah, in the real world. But that's not something that you see very often in film where that's even discussed. And it's not like it's a big deal. It's sort of one quick line that she mentions about the counters and there not being any steps.
Right. Right?
But it's this – there are moments in this film where they do things that are really clever in sort of setting up this family dynamic, which I really appreciated because honestly – this film is better than a Michael Bay film.
That's a low bar, Sean.
But Michael Bay's got $200 bazillion, and this film did in $13 million had better characters than Michael Bay film.
You know, I'd rather look at titties than these aliens, I'm sorry.
This has aspects that are better than Michael Bay. Like, I'm sure if Michael Bay made this movie, it would be much worse.
Yeah, but the wheelchair kid, like, would not have
it's
anything.
It's so badly written, though.
This film is beautiful. I'm sorry.
It's so badly written.
Okay. David, did you want to get in on stuff?
All right. I'll second everything that the others have just said. But the first like that I would like to talk about is that the thing that this movie has that E.T. doesn't have, and that's a fiery apocalypse. And all movies are better if you can get a fiery apocalypse. We're blowing up an entire city block and having the aliens emerge ominously from the towering flames. That is awesome.
Can you tell me how that explosion occurred? Because as far as I could tell, because it was just because all matter is highly explosive.
I think the idiot cops were shooting at the gas station that the aliens were in. Plus the aliens, you know, whatever, they have the power of making everything spark to life or, you know, whatever happens to be convenient at that particular time. Also, I think more importantly and germanely is because that was the cool moment necessary for a fiery apocalypse.
Yeah, it also led to the one touching tear-jerking moment.
Oh, you mean where they reversed the E.T. death and resurrection and flipped and sort of character flipped it?
Yeah, and then they brought him back.
Mm-hmm. Recreating the scenes from The Exorcist, so that was pretty cool too.
It was beautiful.
I kind of love you a little bit right now, David. You're amazing.
I got a little teary-eyed when I watched that scene. He lives. Eric lives. Good times. Anyway, shall we go to dislikes?
Well, I didn't get to do my first like.
Oh,
yeah,
go.
Paul.
I kind of got skipped, so I'll just make it simple. And I'll just go back and second the wheelchair protagonist and point out that while also the family accepts him, none of the other characters in the movie seem to find this odd either. I mean, the family across the street, they never ask, "Well, why are you in a wheelchair?" They're just like, "Okay, whatever." When he's at that horrible, hideous McDonald's party, no one gives him crap about him being in a wheelchair there. Or, I mean, he's sometimes referred to as a kid in the wheelchair by the evil NASA cops. But it's just accepted as a fact of life and just part of what he is, and without any fanfare. And a lot of, I mean, I've seen plenty when I was younger after school specials. I don't know if David had them in Canada where
this feels a hell of a lot like an after school special.
Yeah, but those after school specials would take things like, say, disabilities and whatnot and hammer you over the head with the morals and the message and the problems of that. Whereas this movie takes a lot of that count. It's just okay, this is who he is. And I appreciated that less moralizing, or at least on that aspect. A lot of the rest of this movie, well, does have problems, but we'll get to those in due time. So
I don't know what you're all talking about.
Oh. Well, I guess we're on to second dislike, Sean, so this should be interesting.
It's okay. Rachel, second dislike. Go.
So, second dislike. I have so many to choose from. I have, like, 10. No, sorry. I'm sorry. I have 13. Just that... Okay, let's see. I mentioned the catcalls. You know what? I'm just going to go for, like, the low-hanging fruit here.
Thank God.
And go for the product placement.
Oh, yeah, that's low-hanging fruit.
Like, Jesus fucking Christ, man. Come on. I just, like, Skittles and the Coke everywhere, because it's always Coke. And then, like, the giant birthday party scene at the McDonald's with the dance number. And I will have you know, I had many a birthday party at McDonald's when I was a young child, and none of them were ever like that.
Damn it.
Rachel, just in the interest of fairness, in case Sean thinks to bring it up first, I just wanted to make a slight factual correction to the whole Coke thing. There is one scene where the aliens steal a can of Sprite, which is owned by the Coca-Cola Corporation, but it is not Coke. It is specifically a different soft drink. So please carry on.
Yeah,
but when he steals that's when a catastrophe ensues.
Yes! Yeah, which gets into a completely different like/dislike of mine. So please continue, Rachel. Sorry.
That's really all I got, because it was just like, it's so gross and just constantly there. And, oh, like, okay, when there's like the, next door neighbor girl, which she was pretty awesome, but that's like, you know, when we get into the likes. But then her older sister works at McDonald's, and there's like that whole weird thing where it's like, why don't you stop by for a Big Mac?
Yeah, like, really? The dialogue is like, so McDonald's, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Why don't you stop by for a Big Mac? Okay.
But that comes up later when they drop off the mom and the kid's like, oh, where are we going? And
that doesn't make it okay.
No, it's great.
No, it's creepy.
It's foreshadowing. Evil. It's all foreshadowing.
Foreshadowing.
It's foreshadowed. They make the Big Mac joke earlier in the movie, and then later on, the kid's like, oh, we're going for a Big Mac, huh? And he's like, you got it, kid. And that, like, it's perfect. It's that moment.
I must be
a
psychic.
You must be psychic. It's cute, bro. a repartee, you know, it's good.
I'm not loving it.
No.
Now, who's now putting product placements in the show? Yeah, that would be Paul.
Yeah. That's called irony.
Whatever, man. Whatever. Okay, Paul, what about you?
Okay, so yeah, the product placement. I was gonna bring this one up sooner or later. Rachel just beat me to it. That's why I did it as the tagline. It's just like it is just everywhere. Skittles, Coca-Cola. It looks like what they're drinking out of the planet is Coca-Cola in the beginning. That just disturbed me. You know, the fact that Coca-Cola has healing properties for these aliens is, well, that. The implications of this kind of make me go, And then, of course, all the McDonald's. And it goes better from there. Let's see. There's Sears, Wick's Furniture Store, Valvoline. It's just like, the movie seems to be revolving around. It seems to be no plot surrounded by plot by convenient product placements. I mean, there's a product placement for that poor pool that he falls into over the cliff. I'm sure there would have been a sign there for whatever park that was supposed to be. It's just like this movie doesn't know when to stop the product placements. It's just like the aliens knock over cans of Coke in the grocery store. It's just like over and over and over again. It's just like, God help me. What am I watching? I mean, E.T. has it. Yes. I mean, Reese's Pieces and AT&T and other things. This movie is nothing but product placement with some action sequences.
Okay. All right.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I went cuckoo. Sorry.
It's okay, Paul. David, what about you?
Well, on this product placement thing, just a couple of examples, I guess, for me of where it didn't know where to stop. One is the whole Sears thing, which also the buildup of the job. I mean, I'm still trying to figure out puzzle out the line that where the mother is so anxious about going to, you know, the job at Sears, which is her first job in 10 years.
And they move from Illinois to California for this job, and it doesn't look like she's like upper management or anything. It's like, no. What the heck?
The only bit we get of her job is when she's asking some other guy, so how long have you been in lingerie? the other moment, I think, which really captures the not knowing where to stop of her product placement is when Eric, right? That's our hero.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, is sadly looking at the photo of one presumes his dead father.
Oh, the Dos Equis umbrella.
Exactly.
Oh, God. I missed that one. Yeah, you're right. Oh, God.
So there we go.
Like
product
a really
placement, memento mori.
Dos Equis umbrella that gets focused on a few different times.
In a children's film, no less. Like, what the hell?
Like, they're going to notice.
David noticed.
Yeah, but Dave's not a child.
It was center of the screen. And, so maybe they'll just focus on the dead father. But then subliminally start to think when they get older, there's something as a message encoded in that photo of something that will give them comfort when they are sad.
You're one of those people that thinks the CIA was trying to use subliminal messages to, like, influence people.
So, can I talk about the science now?
That's okay, Julia.
What science?
What science? Yeah.
So this movie starts, we see the aliens, and they're digging for Coke on their planet, their desert planet, which has Coke, like, wells in it. And then a NASA probe, which is cobbled together of, like, spare bike parts, I guess, lands on the planet. And at this point, I was like, wait, how did that even land there? I guess it could be shot down from a different vehicle. No, I don't really understand. But then it sucks the aliens up into its vacuum tubes, which they shouldn't be able to fit into, by the way. I don't know how those alien bodies work at all. And then it's like, I'm just going to take off and go back to Earth. It doesn't have any engines. It doesn't have any thrusters. It has no technology that I could see anywhere that would make it actually rise up off the ground, let alone be able to get out of that planet's atmosphere and then shoot through space and go back to Earth. But somehow it's like
doop 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 doop, no prob. I'm just going to take off out of this planet's gravity well, shoot across space, go through Earth's atmosphere, and land in the NASA headquarters where I'm supposed to. No prob. And then all of the NASA scientists, who you can tell are scientists because they're wearing white coats, always a quality sign, are like, we will do countdown sequences and things are a little weird. I don't know what's going on. Whoops, aliens escaped.
Well, I have two words to describe why they were able to get off that planet. Anti-gravity and faster-than-light travel, because clearly we've been using the word planet perhaps wrong. Because if you see that opening shot, we see it, that's not Saturn.
It's Saturn.
It's not Saturn.
It has
a ring, but it has the wrong kind of ring. Not to mention this doesn't match up with any of the Saturnian moons as far as temperature and its features. So clearly this isn't a different solar system.
Okay.
Clearly NASA had much better funding in the 80s.
I like that you're like, it's in a different solar system. It has to be, in fact, this movie is just bad enough that it doesn't know what Saturn is like.
It has to be because, I mean, it's a moon of a gas giant. We see at least one other moon in the sky along with it. It's not Saturn. It's a moon. It's an alien world in another solar system. And clearly to rise above the ground like that and to land without thrusters, clearly NASA in the alternate 80s of this movie, as David said, had much better funding and invented anti-gravity and faster-than-light travel.
So
it literally had bicycle headlights on it.
So I want to second what Julia said, which is that I find it amusing that you're talking about this as though, like, you're giving the filmmakers so much credit that they thought, well, that's not what Saturn looks like, so let's make it an alien planet, rather than that they just were so dumb they didn't know anything about the solar system, and they just made something vaguely Saturn-like, and were like, yeah, that's good enough. Because there's no indication anywhere in this movie that they have faster-than-light travel, or anti-grav, or anything of that nature. It's the 1980s, man.
Well, the faster-than-light travel also would explain why the aliens were able to survive, even if in a less than perfect form, for the long journey back from what, if you're assuming a Saturnian moon, back to Earth. So clearly, it's a faster-than-light drive that gets from place to place in record time.
No, they're like turtles. They can last a long time without water.
They're like turtles. These aliens are like many things, Sean, but turtles are not three of them.
They can't go for more than a couple of days without Coke.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, seriously. Did you see the ones that were down that mine by the Valvoline sign? They were dying without that Coke.
Yep, Valvoline. You had another product placement.
Right, because they'd been on a freaking flight from Saturn's moon for like 2.5 years, and then they finally got there, and they're like, man, we're tortoises, but like we're space tortoises, and yet we don't have water. We need... But
they're
their water
like, dude,
sucks.
I just need a Coke. All I wanted was a Pepsi.
They don't know it's Coke.
You wouldn't give it to me.
They just know it has essential nutrients, is what that's saying.
Actually, this reminds me.
Yeah, that high fructose corn syrup is really essential to life.
That's what Saturn's moon's made out of.
This reminds me of an old Pepsi commercial. I don't know if any of you will remember this. But it basically had these xenoarchaeologists on this frozen moon, and they're digging and they find and they're looking through stuff, and they stop for a moment. They all drink Pepsi, and then they dig and they find this, and you can see the red and the white, and kind of starting to see the Coke sign. And one of the says, "What's Coca-Cola?" And the professor says, "I have no idea. Pepsi, the choice of a new generation." It was an awesome commercial because it had xenoarchaeology in it, which I thought from the future, which I thought was cool, even though I don't like Pepsi. But yeah.
Okay. Well,
what's Coca-Cola? I don't know. It died with all those aliens and Mac and me.
There you go. Well, I guess I should do mine because we want to make sure that we can that David can actually finish his stuff. So I will just go to mine, and that's related to Rachel's, which is that I found the McDonald's dance party unrealistic.
Wait, what?
So there are a couple things that I just like. It's not vaguely real in any sense of the term, and it does link to this idea that there's this product placement issue where it's just sort of ridiculous. And in this case, it's like, look, I was born in the 1980s. There were no 1980s teens dancing in unison around boomboxes. This never happened. Never, in any situation. McDonald's did not have birthday parties unless it was some weird special McDonald's. That did not happen. I'm sorry, Paul, you're wrong. If you think there were dancing teens in unison around boomboxes, you're wrong.
But McDonald's did have birthday parties.
No, I've never seen a birthday party in a McDonald's in my life.
In my childhood, I had 4 or 5 separate birthday parties that I either attended or were mine at McDonald's. Literally, I was at a birthday party at McDonald's not too far, if I recall, from Stapleton when there was a plane crash there.
What loser has a birthday party at McDonald's?
Apparently, it was totally cool in the 80s to have your birthday at McDonald's, especially if it had a Playland. Oh my gosh.
Because
then you like everybody could have their little Happy Meals and they get a free toy and there's a Playland where you can go play.
Sean, I was sad because I never got to have one.
Oh my god, that's so sad.
We had one that the McDonald's when I was near us when I was a kid. They had a caboose for the birthday parties.
Oh wow. Damn!
Well, yeah, and in some McDonald's they didn't have this where I was. A kid because I grew up in a pretty rural area, but in some of the bigger cities you could actually have Ronald McDonald at your party.
Yeah.
So like ridiculous. That thing where Ronald McDonald appears as part of the party was a thing that some McDonald's were doing.
This is just ridiculous.
But the reason why I raised my hand, Sean, is there's one bit in this dance sequence that really disturbed me. It shows the utter bankruptcy and of people giving a damn in the production of this film. In the middle of this dance sequence, they're dancing and dancing. We hear the stage directions. Did any of you else catch this?
Oh, I missed that.
In the middle of dancing, this guy says, "Now let's pick up the pace. That's very good, Kathy." I rewound the DVD, make sure I wasn't missing this or I didn't see a character talking. In the middle of this dance sequence, we hear the stage directions.
Oh, I thought that was the dance. Like there was a dance contest going on, and there was an announcer.
No, because we never hear anybody else again. No, that's clearly stage directions that didn't get muted, and this just shows how much they care about the actual production of this film.
Okay, well let's be careful with our language. It's not clear that that's necessarily true. But it seems possible.
Like how Sean keeps trying to make us be nice about this movie. This movie is terrible from start to finish. There's no way.
It could just be somebody off camera who really likes one of the ballerina groups or whatever.
You're saying like Kathy has a stage mom or dad?
Yes, exactly.
Because they're like trying to
what
make
other
sure
reason?
She wins that
okay,
contest.
Explain to me what other reason and in what universe do you have guys in football uniforms? Girls in ballerina uniforms, people in hip hop dress, all in the same McDonald's, and then suddenly breaking out into synchronized song and dance. Other than they all came from a dance competition.
I mean, they're having a dance competition in the McDonald's. They say that overtly in the show.
Well, if you remember the 1980s, that was something that happened not at McDonald's. So it was sort of McDonald's attempting really hard to make dance competitions occur in its stores. It's true. It's a fact. I don't know if this is true. I'm just making this up because
you are creating untruth bricks.
That's fine. Untruth bricks is fine. I will build myself a wall, a brick wall of untruths to protect this film from you all.
Maybe we should go to our second likes.
Second likes. All right, Rachel, go.
Okay, so second likes.
Much shorter than your 13 dislikes, I'm sure.
Yes,
yes.
Probably. Let's try to plow through them, though, if we can, so we can make sure David gets rolling.
So actually, you know, for all that you're bitching about how unrealistic this dance scene is, like, the rest of the movie is fucking realistic, I liked the dance break.
Me too!
It was ridiculous, and it was full of 80s hair.
You and me both, Rachel. We both love it. I love it. It was so much fun.
Excellent. So there you go. That's my like.
Yay. I've gone through 3 likes, and we're only on number 2.
I agree that the dance scene, though completely unrealistic, it is one of the best parts. Like, when they roll up to that McDonald's and there are a bunch of kids outside dancing a choreographed dance routine outside by a boombox, I was just like, wait, what is even happening here? And the 80s hair and clothing is off the hook. And then you go inside and it just gets even more ridiculous. And I agree that that is also one of my likes, although it is sadly not as good as it could have been. It could have been better, but still.
Limited budget, Julia. Limited budget.
Oh, you could do it without a big budget and have it be cool, but...
I know.
Like, using any kind of better music would be a good start.
This film has some weird 80s music I never heard of. It's so
sick. It's like the worst knockoff 80s generic music ever.
Including a power ballad.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're done during the jogging sequence, which made it sound like starting to sound like somebody had died.
Well, it's because that was their attempt at building character, which didn't work, where Mac is watching them from a tree feeling sad about how he has no friends, I guess.
Like a giant creeper.
He's been chased by dogs.
He's totally up a tree watching them jog, being like,
I feel like I don't have a friend. Because there were dogs that chased him while he was in that little kid's like remote control car.
I don't understand any of this. Okay, but I wasn't going to talk about that. I was going to just say the dance sequence was all right.
Fair enough. Okay. All right, Paul?
Okay. Aside from the fact that we have bad stage directions and the bear, and whoever's in that bear costume pretending to be Mac can't dance worth crap, I will admit that the dancers were choreographed, and it makes the movie iconically 80s to see random dancing. I mean, you don't see that these days unless you're watching a Bollywood film. It's like, okay, I'm watching an 80s film with random dancing, the boombox, and people in strange costumes dancing. I mean, the stage directions kind of threw me off. The person in the bear costume, Matt, who's actually Mac, is visibly worse dancing than everybody else. I don't know who they got there. They should have gotten somebody who actually could dance, because he looks horrible by comparison to everyone else who actually looks as they have some moves. They have certainly better moves than I have then or now, for that matter. So there you are.
Well, remember too, everyone thinks he's like a robot toy. So the fact that he's even doing anything remotely like dancing in this movie for them is like the most amazing thing in the world.
Says a lot about their IQs in that scene.
That bear is amazing, they all say.
Yeah. Oh my god, it walks.
That teddy is so amazing.
That's funny. That was funny. Well, what about you, David? Second like.
My second like is, well, I don't know how many of you had the experience of playing Sneak King back in the early days of the Xbox 360. This was a game, a very cheap couple of buck promotional game released by Burger King. And in Sneak King, you played the extremely creepy Burger King masked mascot, and you would creep up behind people and surprise them with burgers, right? So kind of like Splinter Cell, only you're pouncing on them looking like something out of a slasher film with burgers. And the way the mechanic worked for you to sneak up on people is that they had this, their perception was limited to a very narrow cone in front of them, and you could see, and so as long as you didn't move directly into their line of sight, they could not see you. And so one of the things that delighted me about this film is that all of the characters here appear to have that same kind of perceptual disability. As well as a total absence of short-term memory, so that they don't remember one scene to the next. And I think one of the best instances of this lack of perception, which had me howling, was when Eric and his mom are going for the jog, and right behind them comes Mac and an entire pack of baying hounds. But because they don't actually, and they're like within a few feet of them, they're also deaf, but they are completely oblivious to this. And every other time that Mac is in a position where somebody who didn't have this tunnel vision would be visible, they don't see him. And as far as that short-term memory is concerned, I mean, quite apart from the their mother's I'm not sure if she what the issue is that makes her actually believe that her son's redecorated the house like a kind of a cross between some potpourri, a knick-knack store, and the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. But then this is completely forgotten about the next scene. So that obliviousness it turned into a massive running gag for me, and I thought that was pretty special.
I have an Ashton Starr's explanation for that. They have none of these characters have any ranks and sense trouble whatsoever. So
yeah, yes.
They can't spot that things are happening around them at any time.
Unless it's right in front of their nose.
Yeah. And even then it's sometimes
questionable. Nice. Yeah. Alright, fair enough. Alright, well, shall we jump to third dislikes then?
Third dislikes. Go, Sean.
Are we going to me? Oh.
Yeah, let's go with you.
Okay, oh, fine.
Okay. Oh, fine. That's fine. I'll go. I'll just talk about the very end, since I don't think I... Have I talked about the end?
No.
Did they turn it with the clothes?
Oh, I talked about the gender normativity. No. Yeah. The other thing I hate about the ending, because I just don't understand how we got there, was the fact that the... The aliens blow up a gas station / grocery store. Sorta, or they're at least involved in it. And then they save a kid, and then magically they're becoming American citizens all of a sudden. And I hated that moment so much because I don't understand why they need to become American citizens. Not to mention, it's how the fuck did they get driver's licenses?
Yeah, they can't even talk. How did they pass a citizenship exam?
Yeah. And so, how did they pass
also,
anything?
Obviously, this is pre-war on terror because no way today could you blow up an entire grocery store and then, like, because you save one kid in a wheelchair, you get to become an American citizen. No, honey, you're in prison forever.
It is very, very pre-war on terror.
It's sort of like it reminded me of the end of Grease when they get in the car and they like fly into the sky, except in this case they get in the car with the aliens and they like drive off and it's like that nobody thinks the wiser. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, if I was a parent, I'd be like, yeah, I get that you like the aliens, but you're not driving in a car with them. It's not happening.
But Sean, I'm going to actually disagree with you because I have this down actually as a like.
Oh, I hate you so much.
I like this because it's not – it is the atypical ending. I mean, consider how this movie could have gone. We could have had Eric die and the aliens go back to their home planet. We could have had the aliens die, which I thought might have happened after that glorious explosion that David so rapturously described for us. We could have had any number of things. We could have the aliens be captured by NASA and work with NASA. I did not see coming the aliens becoming Americanized and acclimating to America. I mean, granted, it makes absolutely no sense. How did we get from there to here? Even in the 80s and pre-war and terror, it's a logical leap that I'm not sure how you possibly make. But it's not – I mean, consider E.T. It's completely in contrast to E.T. E.T. wants to go home. These aliens, I mean, kind of like the aliens and say Alienation, they come here to stay, and that's fine. They can drink all the Coke they want now. And, well, that's the American dream. They acclimatize to America. And
I think you have to understand that at the end of this movie, these are not aliens. They are American citizens.
Right, they're American citizens now.
They're not even legal aliens. They're just Americans.
And that's the American dream, Sean.
Yeah, well, the American dream at that point is stupid.
They're not even just like Sting, a legal alien.
Well, like...
Because Sting, it says he's a legal alien, an Englishman in New York, but these are not legal aliens. They are U.S. Americans.
I don't even know how they could be illegal.
And
we don't even have it.
Last product placement thing, they drive away in a pink Cadillac.
Yes!
Oh, yeah. That is product placement, isn't it?
Which it focuses on that Cadillac hood ornament, so you can definitely see it's a Cadillac.
Well, yeah. So be it. Well, why don't we jump to you, Rachel?
Okay, so I would just like to say, is it me, or are the only people of color in this film involved in the dance number or working at the McDonald's?
Pretty much,
it is not just you.
Okay.
Yeah.
There we go.
The, well, I'll get into that later.
So everyone knows there's only white people in California.
Yeah, there's only white people in California too. Unless they're dancing and or working at a McDonald's. To piggyback on that, there's the point where they first arrive at their new house.
Oh, you're going to take it. Okay.
Yep.
And what the first thing they see is the little girl, who actually is not a bad character.
Yeah.
But for some reason, and I just like, there's no reason for this. There is absolutely no reason for it. She's dressed up like a Native American and sitting in front of a teepee. And I guess she's supposed to be California weird. And the brother's like, what are you doing? And she's like, shh, I'm communing with the earth spirits, which you could have made her like a weird California hippie without going the Native American route. I don't know why they went that way. I don't know why they put her hair in braids and had her like have feathers on her hair and a headdress. It's just, ugh, gross. So much grossness.
Yeah.
And there's no reason for it. And there are no actual Native Americans in this movie.
I wrote that down as even a separate dislike because it bothered me so much. I was like, oh, God, why?
Yeah, it's one of my dislikes as well because it, like you said, Julia, it serves literally no purpose.
No, there's absolutely no reason for it. It's just grossness for the sake of being gross.
They could have just had her sitting there like sitting in the grass with the parrot on her head and the chameleon like crawling on her, because that would have been weird enough.
Well, and right? Like, but it's not even a character. They try to make her weird in that scene only. In the rest of the movie, she is just like straight up a mainstream little girl with her ponytails and her little dresses. So like, it's not even like in Boy Meets World where you have Topanga, who is kind of a weird hippie character all the way through. No, she's just weird in the one scene only, specifically to be weird in that scene and to appropriate someone else's culture for no reason.
Yeah, right. David, do you have a thought?
Well, I was just going to second that. So are we on to be for the dislike? Or?
Sure. That's fine.
Okay. Well, I was actually going to also add to your bit with the Oath of Allegiance at the end, where I was pretty much taking a pneumatic drill to my forehead during that entire scene, contemplating also all the emphasis on military service that the aliens are now going to be due for, and they'll make wonderful weapons.
But that is that. I'm going to disagree with you because here I go again with that ending scene again. I appreciate it because you don't see it in very many movies or anywhere else. You don't hear what the actual oath of citizenship of the United States actually is like, and this movie actually decides to go there. And in a sense, it's almost subversive. Like, that's what really a hope solution is like. Okay, go take up arms when necessary and do other things as necessary. It's fascinating. I'm fascinating to actually hear it out in full, not just a little bit. Oh, you're citizens. I mean, you sometimes hear the foreign princes and potain state stuff, but here they go for the full 20-gauge barrel.
That's true.
Which I appreciated, but it's like, okay, this is what this really means.
I guess it's true. I don't think I've ever heard the whole thing before.
Yeah, I mean, it's not very. It's not something that's really commonly expressed in media. I mean, I've been to a citizenship oath taking once, so it was familiar to me. It was just strange to see it on screen, start to finish. There's a couple extra bits they actually have in the movie, but they're really not very material.
So has everyone done a dislike, or?
I haven't done a dislike.
All right, Paul, you're up, and then we gotta go next.
I'll just throw in a thing. Yeah, the whole communing with the earth spirits in cultural appropriation Native American costume, icky bad.
Yeah, just move on. Yeah, we all agree with that one. Sweet. Yeah. All right, so I believe you're on third likes, so I will skip this round because I've already done three. So we'll go to you, Rachel, third like.
Okay, so third like is going to be
come on now.
The gratuitous horses chasing the van scene was very pretty.
Well, the horses were important, so
two
cow, same cow.
Wait, you don't know about the horses in California?
What about the horses in California, Sean.
I can't believe you guys don't know about this. This is like one of the most.
This is about to be the line of bullshit. Go for it.
No, I'm not going to now, since you just totally just shat all over it and just tried to make something very serious into a joke.
Well-represented.
No, I mean, like, look, you know, like, I try to sometimes bring very serious issues to this show, and then you just shit all over it, and it's just, I'm not going to subject it to your jokes. So you just continue with your, like.
That's all I got. The horses were pretty. I like horses. They chased the van for no apparent reason. Okay. Wow. I was starting to run out of things to like about this movie.
All right.
Wild horses couldn't drag me away. No,
I don't know what you're talking about, Paul.
Sigh.
He's singing the song.
I don't know the song. I'm sorry.
Okay, well.
Well, in any case.
Your musical education is woefully remiss, as usual.
All right, well, who's next?
I'll go next. So the dialogue in this movie, like this whole movie from start to finish, the writing as far as like plot and dialogue is a mess all the way through. It's just so there are occasionally points where you're like, I can kind of see how this could be a good. No, nope. But sometimes the lines are so bad that they are funny. For instance, when they are first arriving in California in the van and little Eric has slept through the night and the brother gives the mom a cup of coffee in the morning as the sun is rising. And she's like, hey, Eric, wake up. We're almost there. And he sits up in his wheelchair in the back of the van and looks out. And what he says is, hey, look at all the cars. This looks pretty nice. They're on the freeway in California.
Right, if you've never seen one.
He's coming from Chicago, where there are cars.
He came from Illinois, not Chicago.
Chicago. He wears Chicago stuff the entire time.
It could mean he's been there.
There are cars everywhere in Illinois.
It doesn't mean he's been there.
So,
he could be.
That was one of
his
favorite lines too.
He says, "Hey, look at all the cars. This looks pretty nice. Like California is nice because there are other cars on the road." And his mom is like, "Pretty nice, huh? Like I totally made us be on a freeway with other cars."
Well, you know, maybe he's from rural Illinois.
Even if you're in the most rural part of Illinois, you've seen other cars.
Well, not that many cars. I mean, it's L.A.
They've
is
driven across the country on interstates.
How do you know they went on the interstate?
The night before he was awake in a traffic jam where there were cars.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's L.A.
When
traffic.
The aliens made everybody crash, there were a ton of cars around them.
Have you ever been in L.A. traffic?
Yes.
Yes.
I grew up in Southern California.
Then you should understand. It's just not right. It's just not right.
It was just a terrible line. Like, there are all kinds of things that you could say, but that is not a good line. Sorry. Apparently this movie is killing me. Literally killing me.
I'm sorry.
Another favorite line, and possibly the best line in the entire movie, is that the older brother is supposed to be something of a sexy thing. And so he arrives, and like when they're getting into the neighborhood, the mom's like, close your eyes. Ooh, there's a pretty girl. And they're like, what? And she's like, I told you to close your eyes. Cheaters. But then they get there and there is a pretty girl because it's the older sister who works at McDonald's. And he's like, hey, pretty girl. And then he's taking stuff into the house and he says, hello, California women. Have no fear. Your hormonal hero is here.
Oh, yeah. That was so
your
sad.
Hormonal hero. This is a teenage boy talking, and what he chooses to say is, have no fear, your hormonal hero is here.
That's a lot of H's.
That's a hard line to say really fast. Can you say it 10 times fast?
No one should ever say that, even once, let alone 10 times fast. So the dialogue is terrible, but sometimes laughably so, and that's my like.
Fair enough. All right, who's left? David?
I guess. All right. Well, one of my likes is this film's utter and complete lack of shame. I mean, it just doesn't give a fuck at any level. at any level. And so I guess encompassing a lot of the stuff that we've been talking about. So whether it's the faster than light lander or the silly putty aliens and the vacuum cleaner, just like it, nothing. It just doesn't care at all. And I kind of have to admire that.
I love you, David. It's ridiculous.
I would argue that it cares very much about the number of Coke cans it shows on the screen.
Well, yeah, I guess there's a shamelessness in its commitment to that to its role as a running dog of capitalism. It's going to run as hard, as fast, and maul as many people as necessary on its path.
That's true. Also, while we're on the subject of Coke cans, can I just say, I don't understand why in the grocery store they have a giant stack of single cans. Like, even in the 80s, they sold them in cases.
Magic reasons. Nobody understands.
Like, the 80s was full of the six-pack rings, and people telling you that those are bad for the environment would kill birds in the ocean.
Yep.
But they still talk about that and nobody listens.
Right, but in the 80s, it was like a really big public service announcement thing. Like, it was told to me at several points in school. And I definitely was, you know, probably 9 or 10 when this movie came out. So it would have been around that time. So I don't understand why there's an entire display of single Coke cans.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Don't know. Convenient for the plot, basically.
Better to knock them down.
Pretty much.
Do you think about how much Coke they actually exploded during that explosion scene?
God, can you imagine how fun that would have been, though?
Can I just say one more thing about this?
Sure.
Explode the Coke here. Explode all the Coke in the universe.
Yes!
Oh, God.
Yay. Well, all right, we got to go. I think everybody's gone, so we need to go to our fourth dislike so we can try to cram this in here. So, Rachel, go. Fourth dislike.
Okay, fourth dislike would be, I'll make this one short and sweet. Like, oh god, where is it? I lost my line. Oh, you know, Julia mentioned the terrible dialogue is alike, but there was just one line, when, for no reason whatsoever, the house has been kind of destroyed and Mac has done home improvements and moved part of an ecosystem into the house. I don't know why, just because. And then he never does anything like that again. But the mom goes, "This house has been destroyed! I'm going back to bed."
That's a dislike of yours?
Yeah, then she went back to bed and I was just like, what the fuck?
And it's never mentioned again.
It's never mentioned. Like, in an incoherent movie full of incoherence. This was a particularly incoherent moment.
The alien fixes it all, and the kids...
That's a like of mine.
Okay, sorry, I won't.
You can, but I'll disclaim as a like of mine.
No, it's fine. I won't touch it.
Go ahead. Okay, this week we can play back and forth. Go ahead. Go ahead, Julie, and then I can tell you why you're wrong.
Oh, okay. Go for it, Julia.
No, so the alien fixes it all, and the kids, like, the mom is like, wakes up and is like, oh, the house is fixed, and the kids are like, yeah, and she's like, thank you, boys, this means so much to me. Now, at this point, the alien has literally sawed a triangular-shaped hole in the front door,
yep.
And I don't know how she thinks that her sons have magically fixed that door, but apparently it's reasonable for her to think that her sons could have done that, and that they're like, oh, it wasn't us. And she's like, what? Now, again, I question, like, what boys, why wouldn't you just take credit for that? And then she's like, what do you mean it wasn't you? Of course it had to be you. And they're like, does this really seem like something we would do? And she's like, well, no, that's a fair point.
I love it. That's great.
Which is, yeah, kind of great, except kind of not. It just didn't make any sense.
Because then the scene ends.
Yeah. There were lots of points like that where it was just sort of like, okay, the point of where the McDonald's, why don't you stop by for a Big Mac? The little girl delivers that line with sarcasm, but she hasn't been sarcastic at any other point, and then the scene just ends. So it's like, there's not... was it supposed to be funny? I don't know.
Yes, it was meant to.
But she's not sarcastic anywhere. Except for the fact where she talks about schizophrenia.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I know that's a dislike too.
I blocked that out of my mind, but yeah, wow.
I can talk about that as one of my dislikes.
Well, have you gone for your dislike, Paul?
No, but I'll talk about it. In addition to cultural appropriation issues, this movie also has issues with not treating mental illness very kindly. It's like I think they think you have schizophrenia when you see things that aren't really there. And I'm cringing aside. Oh my god, this is okay. So we already had the girl in the Indian costume, and now we're going to disparage mental illness and disability. And you've done so well so far with the physical disability, and now you're really going to go there. Luckily, they don't go there for the rest of the movie, but it just made me go ooga ooga. Oh, come on. You're doing well with the disabled, physically disabled protagonist, and you're going to throw that away with schizophrenia? Really? Gah.
I'm sorry, Paul.
Sorry, sense of subject.
It's all good. David, what about you?
Well, I guess my fourth dislike is that it doesn't quite have the density of of surreal badness to really take it up to the first rank of So Bad They're Great movies, right? It's not Glen of Glenda or The Swarm or Battlefield Earth, where every second something is going spectacularly wrong. There are long, long stretches of just meh, kind of sort of mediocre sub-80s sitcom blah blah going on. And so we have to wait too long between to get to the McDonald's dance routines or exploding supermarkets and the like. So yeah, it doesn't quite have the zing that I would hope to find in the truly wonderful bad film.
That's unfortunate, David. That's very unfortunate.
He's right, though.
I understand that you guys think that's true, but this is my childhood. You can't destroy it.
Haven't you? I don't think you've done your own fourth dislike, Sean.
No, I'm already up on four.
Okay, I've missed them.
Yeah, I've gone through four.
Okay.
So I can't go this round. I've gone over McDonald's dance party, the ending, the gender normativity, and I've talked about the aliens because they're poorly constructed. So
okay, so fourth likes.
Fourth likes. Rachel, go.
Okay, so likes. Let's see. Wow, at some point I started listing dislikes as likes, so I actually have fewer likes than I thought.
Oh, dear.
Okay.
They're not friends.
Talk about the little girl.
Okay, yeah. You know what? Oh, wait. Okay, you know what? No, actually, I will just read this one out to you verbatim. Questions a mom should never have to ask. Eric, what is that in your lap?
True.
And especially when you consider there's that also that amazing scene when they're like, oh, the little alien is sad, when it's the disgusting little alien surrounded by wadded up tissues. I think we could get something very Freudian out of this movie. So you know what, I'll go with that.
Good job, Rachel. Clearly you got some good stuff out of that. That made you happy inside, huh?
I don't know about that. I'll never be happy again because of this movie.
You're welcome.
I hate you.
You love me. You know it to be true. Search
What's
your feelings.
In your lap?
Good size. All right, Paul, what about you?
Okay, so in the midst of having this movie in the background on for the second time, I watched it and then I had it on in the background. It occurred to me what these aliens really are and how I could look at them. And then this is my fourth like. The Mac is a kobold in the classic medieval German sense of the word. He's absolutely destructive. He causes chaos and confusion everywhere. But treat him right, and he actually will fix all the damage. He will pull you out of the water. Yeah, I mean, so he has that sort of like trickster fairy sort of spirit quality to him, and I appreciated that. I mean, the movie doesn't do it particularly well, but it's. I mean, he makes the room into a forest, and then he puts holes in the wall, holes in the door, nearly gets Eric killed, but then he rescues him, and then he fixes all the damage. So it's very, very much that sort of trickster sort of the good with the bad sort of thing. And I'm not going to touch the whole resurrection thing because that's a whole dislike of my own. But yeah, I appreciated. Okay, it's like okay, Mac and his family are kobolds. I can live with that. So that's my fourth like.
Interesting. All right, David.
I guess this is up to our fifth and final like. Is that where we're at?
Fourth like, Ron.
Fourth like. Well, I appreciate a film that is willing to threaten its audience, which it does in its very final second. It's probably a product placement of Hubba Bubba or Bubblicious, and it says "We'll be back." And the chill that ran down my spine. Yeah, that's good. So
the
I can go with that.
The sequel has been permanently canceled after it flopped in the box office. Don't worry, I checked.
They're canceling the Mac and Me. That's it. Yeah.
So my fourth like is the little girl in the next door house. Because other than appropriating other people's culture and like sometimes not knowing what the fuck to do with her lines, which are baffling, because like was she supposed to not be sarcastic and just be like, yeah, hey, why don't you stop by for a Big Mac sometime and date my sister? That's cool. Because that also doesn't make a whole lot of sense. It's a really weird line. But aside from that, like, she's kind of cute, and she basically has a lot to do during the movie. She is always trying to help Eric out and to figure out what's going on with Mac, and she's, like, willing to wear that vacuum cleaner on her back, which turns out to be kind of a scary thing for her because, like, once Mac is trapped in the vacuum cleaner, things go a little haywire because apparently these aliens have lots of control over electricity and stuff. But basically, like, she's kind of a cool little girl, and she does a lot of stuff. And she's, like, the person who alerts everybody that Eric's wheelchair has rolled down this hill and into a pond, for instance. So,
that happens.
Yeah, and she's really nice to Eric from the very start. Like, she's just totally like, oh, yeah, he seems cool. He's my age. You want to come to this birthday party with me?
I love that. That makes me happy.
It's nice. It's nice to see a kid who's actually a decent kid.
I was never invited to birthday parties as a kid.
That's why you are down on the McDonald's birthday party, because you never went to one because no one ever invited you, because you were alone in your room watching Mac and Me, for the love of God.
Hey, I wasn't that much of a loner. Don't make me feel worse. God.
Sean, if I had known you, I would have invited you to my McDonald's birthday party so you wouldn't have to be bitter about it, and maybe you could have done something other than watch this movie.
I had asthma. I had to stay home because I was sick. I had to watch something. It was this or Star Wars. And, you know, I watched Star Wars a lot, so.
Oh, man. You should have had Flight of the Navigator.
I had that, too. That movie scared me, though.
I was terrified so much but that this movie, like, how bad it was, that I then went to check the Rotten Tomatoes rating for Flight of the Navigator, which is a movie I loved as a child. And I was like, oh, thank God. Like, that actually has good ratings. So
yes,
it wasn't
it
just me. Like, people liked that movie, whereas Mac and Me has a 0% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Nobody liked it. Wow.
No critics at all. All the reviews are bad.
That's sad.
A 0%. That's lower than any Transformers movie.
I don't think people who saw this movie as adults had good childhoods. That's how I can tell, is that they didn't like this movie. It's just not right.
Anyway, let's move on. So what are we, like, you still got to go, Sean?
Oh, what are we on?
Fourth dislike. Fourth like. Fourth like.
Fourth like.
Fourth like.
Oh, okay. Fourth like's easy. I really enjoyed the hopeful optimism of the 1980s about space travel. I realize that scientifically it's nonsense, but I liked it. I like that this was not a big deal. We sent a probe to Saturn, or, as Paul might, it might be right, to some planet in a distant solar system, and it was, like, not a big deal. Like, we just did that, and whoop-de-doo. I love that, because that makes me so happy, because I remember watching shuttle launches when I was a kid, and thinking about how much I wanted to go into space, and realizing I had asthma, I would never get to be in space, because they don't take asthmatics, because they're bastards. So, that made me happy. I like that little bit. So, yeah, I don't know if anyone had any thoughts on that. If they don't, I do think that maybe we should cram David's last things in ASAP, because he has to go.
I agree. Let's just stop talking. David, what's your fifth dislike?
My fifth dislike, I'm doing like Rachel. I'm getting my likes and dislikes confused here. I guess my fifth dislike is that it's attempts at humor. The thing with bad movies, just every kind of film if it's bad enough, it turns into a comedy, except comedies, which unfortunately don't turn into horror movies, and they just become sad. And this film's attempts at humor were sad.
I
agree.
I thought it was funny.
What's your fifth like, David? Fifth and final like.
Well, I think we did those already, didn't we?
No.
We got one last like.
Yeah, we're basically cramming you in now.
Okay. All right. So, one last, something that I liked. Maybe this falls under the shamelessness. I wasn't sure, but I got the feeling that the film was making a reference to the man who fell to Earth. And if it has the nerve to do that, then kudos to it. And as I'm going to take off, do you want me to just leave you with my rating? And
grade this movie.
I think that grade it. All right, what are you going to give it, David?
It's because it doesn't quite have what I want. Like I said, it's got too many longueurs to be a truly classic terrible movie. I'm just going to have to give it a sad C minus.
A sad C minus. That's surprisingly high.
Wait, so, like, that's really high. You actually think this movie is basically an okay movie?
No, because you see, if it were really the worse it would get, like if it started to really make me laugh all the time, it would go higher. So, like The Swarm or Battlefield Earth, I'd probably give an A to.
Earth.
This is a torture. This is like a torture cinema grade, what I envisage as that. If just in terms of just sheer quality, if we want to do that, then in that case, I'm going to go with a D minus.
All right. So is
or
it C minus
possibly
or D slash?
Which are we supposed to be ranking it on? Quality or enjoyability?
Honestly,
it's
we never
kind of
set
both.
A criteria.
It's just
whatever
you decide.
Okay,
so
split
like,
the difference.
I usually go based on whether I would ever want to watch this movie again.
Let's go with the D minus.
D minus.
There we go.
You guys are trying to ruin everything. All right, David.
And on that note, I will leave you all to your devices. Thank you so much.
Take care,
bye, David.
Okay, bye.
All right, guys. So what do we have left?
We have our fourth fifth dislike and our fifth like.
Okay, because I have had a lot of vodka, so I don't know. So
let's blow through this.
All right. Well, let me just tell you my fifth dislike, because it's pretty straightforward. And that's the dance scene in the bear suit, like the bear thing. The whole bear thing is just so wrong.
So creepy.
So wrong on so many levels.
I told
and,
so
like,
creepy.
Okay, so this is obviously, they're like, hey, in E.T., it was pretty cute when we had E.T. go out trick-or-treating dressed like a ghost. We'll have to come up with a different alien scene where the alien wears a costume and goes out in public and people don't know it's an alien. We'll make it an animatronic bear in a really bad bear suit with holes cut through the eyes that just make it look super, super creepy. And like it might talk to children and be like, hey, kids, would you like some candy? Come into my car. I got some candy.
Oh, my God.
Look at its eyes, though. Oh, my God. So creepy.
Oh, God.
So such a creepy bear suit. And then like it goes into McDonald's and is like, I'm going to dance on the counter because I'm a creepy bear and I'm dancing on the counter. And it doesn't dance well. And then like on top of that, it would have been much better if at that point, like This is where, again, the plot doesn't make any sense. So government agents come to the McDonald's to try to get this bear, which they realize is the alien. I feel like at that point, the best thing to do would have just been to have him take the bear suit off and look like Mac so that everybody would be like, Mac is so cute. He's so exciting. He's such a cute alien. And look at him dancing. And then if everybody in the crowd protected him, the government agents couldn't get near him. But instead, they just like randomly go off on a chase with the bear suit, which, oh, that whole everything about the bear, like from the moment it starts where like the woman who lives across the street is all like, isn't he a little old for a teddy bear? He's like nine. 9 year olds could have teddy bears. And why are you making fun of a kid in a wheelchair with a teddy bear anyway? What the fuck is wrong with you?
I will say that was like an amazing line, though. What was it? It was like, hold on. They're kind of old for a teddy bear, isn't he? He's from Illinois.
Yeah, kids in Illinois use stuffed animals differently. So then he takes the teddy bear into the car with him. And she's like, how long has that been with you? And he's like, a long time. And then she's like, did it just move? And he's like, yeah, it's a new animatronic one. And she's like, I thought you said it would be with you for a long time. And he's like, well, it has, but it just got like new microchips.
Is like, what the
And
hell?
She believes him because she's...
Yeah, like... There's no way in world that anyone would believe that this is actually a teddy bear. And also, it's just so creepy. Why is there this bear suit? I love bears. As a child, when I was so nine, creepy. I was eight. I literally had my room wallpapered with teddy bear wallpaper because I got to choose my wallpaper. And I chose teddy bears because I loved bears so much. And this, if I had seen this, probably would have made me stop loving bears.
Oh, no.
Because it's that creepy.
It's not
it, like, creepy. I didn't think you could make it look creepier than the actual alien, but they did.
Man, you're all just party poopers. Just, like, take all the joy out of life, man. It's not that creepy. Okay, it's creepy. I agree.
It's creepy.
Fucking creepy, dude.
So that's my favorite dislike.
All right. Am I left? Is that all that's left?
No, it's Rachel. It's Rachel, you, me, and you. Rachel.
Okay, go.
Wait, sorry. Are we on dislikes or likes?
Last dislike.
Okay, and then we'll have a like, right?
Yep, yes. Last like. We end on a like.
Okay, so my last dislike is going to be... Let's see. I mentioned the tiny, gross alien surrounded by tissues. it's just, you know, I'm going to just bring up again that whole, the fact that the aliens whistling basically sounds like cat calls, and that really grossed me out on so many levels that I just can't. Yeah.
Now imagine that creepy bear suit walks up to you in a bar and is like...
I would fucking like get someone else's mace and mace that thing until it cried blood. I swear to God.
I'm just imagining the bear suit coming up and it's like,
wow.
I think I saw that episode of Law and Order SVU. The Bad Touch Bear.
So what about you, Paul? What's your fifth dislike?
My fifth dislike, okay. My fifth dislike is, you've all seen the movie Idiocracy, right?
Yes.
No.
You need to watch the movie Idiocracy, Julia. Anyway, Rachel, have you seen the movie Idiocracy?
I actually have not.
Okay, anyway. Anyway, the adults in Idiocracy are uniformly more intelligent than the adults in this movie. It's not even close sometimes. From the NASA people who don't know how to handle a returning probe, to the mom, to the agents chasing him. It's just like, I mean, I know it's one of those kids movies where the kids are supposed to be smart, but the adults are actively stupid and unperceptive. I mean, David mentioned before about them jogging along and not noticing a giant pack of dogs chasing Mac. I mean, the agents running for miles after Eric in the wheelchair, like, what the hell? How dumb can you get?
They have a car, right?
Yeah. So yes, they have a car. I can't, and they just keep chasing him on foot again, more and more. I mean, it's a good chase scene for Eric. It shows he does have wheelchair skills, but the adults have the intelligence and IQ pencil in this movie. It's not even funny at once. I mean, even the NASA people are just like dumb and stupid. It's just like, it was offensively bad.
In my experience, that's what adults are like from the child's perspective.
Yes, but it goes beyond ET levels to just unrealistic levels of idiocy. I mean, you drop these adults in Idiocracy, and they would just be the basic mean intelligence of everyone else in the movie.
All right, ouch.
All right, Sean, what's your fifth and final dislike?
My fifth and final life. The final dislike.
Yep.
I don't actually have one written down. Shoot.
This is going to be hard to think of, isn't it?
This is going to be so hard because so much of my childhood right now has been just dragged out and stomped on. And I'm just like, deep down, I'm hurting, guys. Just deep down.
Can I give you a hug, Sean?
No, I feel like your this hate for this movie would bleed through the hug, and I just have cardiac arrest. And
just go watch Flight of the Navigator; it'll make everything.
That movie still scares the crap out of me.
Oh, I love that movie so much.
Every time the aliens come out, I'm just like, no, I can't do this. They're so creepy. Like, what is it with like 80s films for kids being scary? Like the Navigators, like the ones with the kids where they go into space, they build the spaceship and they go up. Remember that movie? With like young Ethan Hawke in it?
The Navigators?
Isn't it called it's called The Explorers. Sorry, not The Navigators.
I don't know what you're talking about.
It's on Netflix, go watch it. It's actually an okay movie. It's about a bunch of kids, they build a spaceship and they like, after getting a message from, they presume from somewhere, and they just follow the instructions, and then they end up in space, and it's like, their aliens are creepy in that. The aliens are creepy in Flight of the Navigator. E.T. is creepy. The aliens in this are creepy. Like, why are all aliens in the 80s creepy?
I don't know.
Like, why don't they have happy, nice aliens? Well, in any case, last dislike for me, I don't like that this movie makes me sad because I have to now talk about it in the context of torture cinema.
That was a torture.
You could have taken that one off the list, Sean. You could have, but you didn't.
I didn't because I knew I could never convince you all to watch it for Shoot the Wisp. So this is the only way that we would ever talk about this movie that I love. That I watched on VHS when I had asthma attacks and had to stay home from school. This is the movie, one of the movies that I watched along with Star Wars, and I would watch this. And I feel sad that my friends did not like it as much as I did as a child.
I'm sorry.
It's sorry, okay. Sean.
I'll probably be okay. So there we go. That's what I'm going to go with. Also, the adults are dumb in this. And I don't understand what the motivation for the NASA people is.
Like, I don't understand what the motivation for anyone in this.
Well, I understand with the kids. They're like, oh, this like creepy alien dude. He's trying to communicate. Alrighty, like, we think he's looking for his family. I don't know why they think that, but at least they're motivated by that. But what are the NASA people looking for? At least in E.T., it makes sense what they're doing because they're evil. But in this, they're like, we're just going to capture the alien dudes. But then they all show up to their, like, christening into American Jesus camp.
Yeah.
Right?
So, like, no. Oh, we decided that we're not going to vivisect you now that you're American. Yeah.
Because you saved a kid in front of us, so now you are okay.
You saved
an American. My heart grew six sizes.
Right. But, like, I don't understand what their motivation was. Like, I get that, like, the movie was not intending them to be supervillains in the same way as E.T., where the humans are actually some of the more evil people. But yet, at the same time, I'm like, but, like, what Where is the moment when they're supposed to be like, yeah, we're just trying to like not have aliens running around in Los Angeles because that's
this
not
is
necessarily
part of
healthy.
Why I said this movie is really badly written and the plot suffers for it.
Well, we'll get into that in a minute. So that's what I'm going to say. So why don't we go to the fifth and final like, Rachel?
Okay, so Sean, I feel like you should start because you love this movie. So tell us about your love.
Okay, I love how straightforward and tight this film is.
Wait, what?
What?
I'm not that drunk, Sean. What the hell do you mean?
It's an hour and a half. It doesn't drag. It hits all the right emotional notes for me. I'm happy.
It doesn't
I'm sad.
Drag?
I have fear. I have joy. I have love. I have worry. All of those emotions are there. It does not drag at any point. This film, right from the start, is like weird alien mystery shit. What's going on? And then it just goes. It never stops. And it's just tight. It's very economical. There aren't any wasted scenes except for the very end 3 seconds of film with the weird American bullshit. But other than that, fairly straightforward. And I appreciate that. I appreciate that it is not a 2.5-hour film that has like a 6.5-hour goblin fight scene that doesn't need to exist. Yeah.
Okay, that.
You know I'm right.
I disagree with you from a screenwriting standpoint, but...
Well, you know what?
Yeah, like this movie rambles all over the place and is incoherent. But
no, it's not.
I
it makes total
that
sense.
That it's nice that it's only an hour and 39 minutes and not 2 hours and 39 minutes.
That would have been real torture.
It's it never lollygags. It's all straightforward.
Oh, it took forever. Oh my god.
What are you talking about? The first 10 minutes are the setup for the that's it. It's done.
If this movie were the first 10 minutes, then it would be okay. Then it would only be 10 minutes.
Then it's chase scenes after that.
It just takes
It's a couple of chase scenes, it's got some character development. It's good.
It has nothing. It has no, it just it's incoherent random scenes and a dance scene in a McDonald's.
It has everything a 7-year-old child could want.
It has no rising and falling action. Well, so does a Happy Meal.
It has rising and falling action. What are you talking about?
It really doesn't.
It does too. You lie.
I'm sorry, but no.
It
so
does.
Rachel, what's your fifth like?
So my fifth like is the fact that this is actually a horror movie. And they con you into thinking it's not by having a theatrical score that is like a happy 80s kids movie. But I think if you just took the music and replaced it with something suitably creepy, like, say, you know, like the music from, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street, perhaps, then it would be revealed to you that this movie is a fucking horror movie and it's fucking terrifying, for example.
I totally agree.
Yes, please, you know, please enunciate this.
So consider first the fact that you've got these stretchy, silly, putty aliens. They're not cute. They're not cute at all. They're fucking creepy. And then, like, remember when the little alien, like, there's the initial chase scene and it's really sort of weird and creepy anyway. And then he's like looking into the van and then he like gets in the back seat of the van. I've seen that on Criminal Minds. It's fucking creepy, right?
Unsub.
Exactly. Mac is the unsub.
Oh, God.
Or, like, that scene when the alien is fucking drilling through the wall. And the kid's just like, what the fuck?
Or this scene where the alien lures the kid to fall off a cliff into a
closet. Exactly! Exactly! Can you just imagine Dr. Reed, like, trying to come up with a profile of this alien?
So, this made me think of something, which is that, Rachel, if we are ever in the same place again, I swear I'm going to do my best to find an alien mask from this movie and wear it in front of you, and I will scare the shit out of you. I will come around corners just...
Remember that thing I said about macing it until the eyes bleed? Anyone could stop me. Because they'd be like, no, I've seen this horror movie. I've seen this episode of Criminal Minds. And then you'd wear the fucking teddy bear suit and you'd get arrested. Because that suit is fucking creepy and this is a horror movie.
At the end,
instead of going to prison like he should, the unsub becomes a citizen of America, which is just a philosophical point to show that creepy stalkers who harass people, think about all the wolf whistling, are actually among us. and that the justice system does not serve the victims.
Not just harass people, blow up entire grocery stores. Like, what happened to all the humans in that grocery store? Because, like, I'm pretty sure they all died. You don't survive that.
Yeah.
They evacuated them.
Wait, did anybody evacuate?
No, they were. They were evacuating people right when they came in and the aliens were picking on the sodas and the alien got the gun. They were evacuating people.
Hey, don't tell me that doesn't show their... For a moment, I'm going to go into the headcanon of Rachel. Don't show me that's the horror, evil underbelly of this movie. I mean, that alien's wandering around with a gun. I think it fires a couple shots. It's like, okay, so...
It never fires. It never fires the gun.
I think it fires the gun.
No, it raises the gun in its hand at the police officers, but it never actually fires. The police fire on the alien, thinking that it's a threatening gesture, which, fair enough, but...
the alien has a deadly weapon in its hand.
Yeah, but it doesn't know.
Yeah, and it doesn't know that it's going to make the grocery store explode. But does it stop it from doing it?
No.
Some aliens just want to watch the world burn.
Some aliens do want to do that.
Yeah.
So, okay, so Rachel, you love that it's a horror movie. Paul, yes. What is your fifth like?
Oh God, my fifth like. It's such a tiny like, but there it is. We get to see 5 seconds of snorks in this movie.
We totally do. Oh my God.
That made me happy.
Yeah, Moss was like, is he watching the snorks? And I was like, I think he is.
He was. I rewound it to make sure I was seeing what I was seeing. It's like, aw.
Okay, so my fifth and final like is that because I watched this and did my research, I found out that apparently Paul Rudd, for the last 10 years or more, has every single time he has gone on the Conan O'Brien show, instead of playing a clip from one of his movies, plays the clip of Eric falling off the cliff.
Yep.
Yes.
Like, yep.
Every I've single seen time. That. So, like, there's a super cut on YouTube that you can see of all the times that he's done it with Conan O'Brien being like, okay, here's a clip of Anchorman 2. Eric!
Splash.
And, like, Conan O'Brien gets, like, more and more bitter about it as the years roll on. And he's like, this time you said you weren't going to do it. You said you weren't going to show this horrible clip from this horrible movie from the 80s called Mac and Me. And you did it again. And Paul Rudd's like, yeah, the only time I didn't do it was when I was in a Judd Apatow movie and he wouldn't let me. But, like, I got in trouble the last time. The studios really didn't like it. So I did bring a clip of my real movie this time after he's already shown it once. And Conan O'Brien's like, all right, we'll play the clip of your real movie now that we've played the Mac and Me, you've got it out of your system. And he plays the wheelchair scene again, twice in one show.
It's a great in-joke. It's pretty hilarious. Like, who is it? Who is it has the thing with Matt Damon?
I don't know.
Oh, one of the late night talk show people. The guy that used to do the men show. What the fuck's that guy name? Whatever. Doesn't matter. But he has this thing with Matt Damon where every time he's like, we'll get Matt Damon in for an interview. And then at the end when he brings Matt Damon, he says, I'm sorry, we're out of time. And he's done that for like years. It's like a running gag joke until finally Matt Damon like loses his shit and like curses him out on TV. It's hilarious.
That's terrible. But, like, yeah, I don't think I would have ever appreciated the Paul Rudd Mac and Me joke without having sat through the entire horrible movie.
That's great.
But literally every time I watch the wheelchair scene, it gets funnier.
It is funny.
And it is really and truly an amazing piece of stunt work. So, cheers to you, Jade Caligari. I don't know if you're listening to this because, like, I feel bad for Jade Caligari. He was in this and, like, an episode of Alien Nation and
good show.
An episode of one other TV show, and that's it. He was never in anything else. Probably because Mac and Me just totally killed his career. And that's not his fault. Like, he didn't write it, and he's not responsible for the bad dialogue, and he did work his ass off on the stunts.
He really did.
Yeah.
So, we gone through all of them, huh?
Finally.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've made it. So it is now time for us to grade. So I believe David's grade was a D minus?
D minus.
D minus, okay. Rachel, what would you grade this film?
I'm going to also go by the standards of if I would ever watch it again. Actually, what the hell did I grade Plan 9? I'm trying to remember.
It's on the website.
Let me go try to find it, because... So go ahead and skip me for a minute.
Sure. Go, Paul. You give your grade while we Google this.
Okay, well, I kind of like the way that David had platted this. I think a D minus works pretty damn well for what this movie tried to do and failed to do. I had given Plan 9 from Outer Space a D minus. This is a D minus in a completely different way. So yeah, it's a D. It's still a D minus.
Rachel, you gave it a D plus. Plan 9.
Okay, so in that case, I'm going to go ahead and give this one a D minus because on the grand scheme of things, I have watched Plan 9 from Outer Space multiple times and enjoyed it in its own unique, idiotic way. You could pay me enough to watch this movie again, but it would require paying off my student loans for me.
I wish we could get paid watching bad movies. That would be a good job.
Shit, yeah.
Wouldn't that be
People,
fun?
People, you should pay us.
Yeah!
I would happily break up torture cinema.
Kick us out of the fan cast category, guys. Make this our full-time job.
Yeah!
That would be worth it.
I would totally... That would do. This is my full-time job.
Oh, hell yeah. This is so much fun. If we could do this for full...
I would actually, review books and shit.
Yeah, that would be great, too. Gosh, we can dream, y'all.
Yeah, I'd have time to read then, because I wouldn't have to work my stupid...
We need a rich benefactor. Does anybody know Neil Gaiman?
I know somebody who knows Neil Gaiman. That's about
I don't think Neil Gaiman's gonna pay for us.
He's not gonna pay a damn thing.
No.
We could dream. It would be
Does
cool.
Does anybody know Bill Gates?
That we could do with Bill Gates. I mean, good lord, Bill Gates just gave us like a couple $1 million. That could keep us going for years.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
On our budget, we could go for a couple decades on that.
Well, we were talking about making a living, Paul. We didn't want to be dirt poor.
And we got to split it between everybody.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. We just selectively kill off a few people.
My grade for this movie is going to be a D. So I'm like going to say that it's horrible in a lot of ways, but I did really dig that it had a kid in a wheelchair as the main character and that the actor was actually someone who was a wheelchair user and that they like really played to the strengths. And I agree with Sean that like it is pretty nice to see a movie that has nice family dynamics and generally the people are nice to each other and they want to be nice to each other. So for those things, it gets a D instead of an F.
All right. So it comes down to me to save this movie. I'm giving it a B+.
Oh my god. Oh my god. That's just no.
Wow.
That's so wrong.
No. Blowjob aliens. Come on. Blowjob aliens. What the fuck?
I love this movie so much that I want to watch it again.
No.
Oh, Sean.
I can't
see a psychiatrist
help it.
About this.
Like I feel like I just can't help it. I just love it. I love this movie. It's just, it's nostalgia, and it's a dumb movie, and I don't care. I love it. You know, it's like Sons of Steel.
No, Sons of Steel is so much better than this.
You can say that, but I still love this movie. It's a B+ for me. Sorry. And I'm not going to do the math in my head, because I have no idea what that makes it.
I'm trying to figure that out right now.
It's still probably a D something. It's probably like a D+. Because the B+ doesn't offset 3 D minuses.
Let's see, there are 5 of us, right?
Yeah, there are 3 D minuses, a D, and a B+.
Okay, so it comes out to a 1 point. It comes out to a D+.
See? Yep.
3 D minuses and a D, and a B+ comes out to a D+.
So D+ average.
Wow.
It's not fair to this movie. You know, I really thought at least it would get a C average, but...
No.
But unfortunately...
How will I live and breathe?
I'm the only one on this show that knows what it's like to be a child. So...
Oh, God.
John, what's that in your lap?
Oh, God.
Oh, what? That's horrible, Rachel. It's terrible. All right, guys. On that note, we have finished this episode. If you would like to leave your thoughts about Mac and Me, you can do so on the episode.
You will have my profound pity.
Can we take a moment, before we end this show officially, to talk about Doorway to the Hidden World and the amazingness that was the last episode?
Yes.
Yeah. Did you listen to that, Sean?
I did. I listened to it once. I need to listen to it again. If you're not listening to Doorway to the Hidden World, you really should go Google it. Doorway to the Hidden World. Go and listen. It's great.
I believe its website is doorwaytothehiddenworld.com. Also, you can follow at Kevin Lux Doorway on Twitter.
Yep.
We had asked questions about the CDU in the Omega Man episode, and Kevin Lux totally answered a lot of those questions and talked a lot about the CDU and CAGs.
Yep. Very important.
And gave us props. He likes our stuff.
Yes, he does.
I'm not sure whether to be complimented or horrified by that, but okay.
I get the feeling that it's both a compliment and a horror that he's actually aware of our show.
I think it's mostly a compliment. I think with Kevin, you just got to be careful not to get too involved because being monitored.
I think this means that now we're being monitored.
Well, as long as you don't wake up with a strange, bumpy abrasion on one of your arms, you'll be fine.
I'm worried about the Habsburgs. They're after me now for sure.
Oh.
Well, they would come after you, Paul. I mean, you're an ideal target.
Yeah, I know. I have the whole prince name in my Twitter handle and stuff, so that must just really cheese them off.
Yep, definitely, for sure. Rachel has no idea what we're talking about right now.
You lost me totally.
Go listen to Doorway to the Hidden World.
At doorwaytothehiddenworld.com.
Yeah. Seriously. Yeah.
I hope we're getting some cross-advertising from this.
Yeah,
the last episode was all about us.
Yeah.
Nice.
He went into all this, giant explanation of the CDU. It was amazing.
It's great. It's really, really great stuff. And he brought out a lot of the stuff that I knew and stuff that I didn't know about the CDU and Carter's involvement. So, you know. In case you didn't know anything about that. So, any case, go listen to that show if you're not already. For us, you can all the information about where you can contact us and whatnot will be at the end, but do let us know what you thought about Mac and Me. The poll for the Christmas special has already been decided. We will be watching Ernest Saves Christmas for the Christmas special. So thank you for voting.
Can't be as bad as Mac and Me.
Oh, well...
If you, listener, are out there and you secretly love Mac and Me, you should definitely tell at Skiffy and Fanti on Twitter or leave a comment on the blog or something, because it will make Sean's childhood heart grow 3 sizes.
Also, if you tell Paul Rudd to send me an email, that would also work. I feel like he secretly loves this movie.
Paul Rudd's going to send you an email and all it's going to be is a video.
Don't Rickroll me with Mac and Me. Alrighty, guys. Well, on that note, we should close out the show. So thanks, guys, for joining me for the episode, and thanks for listening. And awkward ending. And scene. If you would like to send us hate mail on this episode or any other topics we've covered, you can do so in a number of ways. You can send us an email.
SkiffyandFanti@gmail.com.
You can send us a tweet.
@SkiffyandFanti.
Leave a comment on the blog.
SkiffyandFanti.com.
Go to Google Plus.
Shawnee Jen.
And or Facebook.
The Skiffy and Fanti Show. Our intro music comes from Time Flux by Revolution Void. You can check them out at freemusicarchive.org.
Another weak human afraid to face death.
I fart in your general direction.
France, different planet.
The Force will be with you. Always.
End of line.
Or the bottom. I'm half of Sean Connery's. Fuck you, Sean.
That's just funny, and you know it.
God damn it. Like Gerard Butler, without the Scottish accent. Or the bottom half of Sean Connery. You asshole.
It's great. I wrote a line that actually made you get it. You can't read it. This is wonderful. All right, try again.
Give me a minute. I hate you so much.
You can do it. I got faith in you.
Okay. Like Gerard Butler without the Scottish accent, or the bottom half of Sean Connery in Zardoz, but where you still know there's... Wait, hold on a second. But... where you still know there's that top half in the accent, but can't see it. Okay.
And yet he giggles every time you say the word penis.
It was so weird. Is your character, like, gumming the tools?
Those are the clicking sounds.
He's reading the stage directions that you put on him, man.
He's assembling things with his tongue.
Maybe the ladies like it. I don't know.
Okay.
Shall I do the honors?
Okay. This has turned into Victor Borge's phonetic punctuation routine.
Okay.